some of the concerns around kids in watch houses is that there's no access to education, there's no access to fresh air, and they're housed with adults as well.
That was CEO of Queensland Advocacy for Inclusion, Matilda Alexander. In August of this year, the Queensland government made it legal for adult police watch houses to be used as youth detention centres. Youth have been held in adult detention centres for years, but recently cases are increasing. This has a concerning effect as criminalised children are some of the most vulnerable to human rights abuses in Queensland.
So a community legal centre and a youth group called Youth Empowered Towards Independence brought a human rights challenge to the practice of keeping kids in watch houses. The challenge was seeking to say that that was in breach of their human rights and also in breach of the statutory duties. So in response to that, the government has bypassed the Human Rights Act, made an exception to the Human Rights Act, saying that children can be held in watch houses and that a human rights complaint cannot be made about their conditions.
This law becomes even more concerning, as studies show neurodivergent and youth with disabilities are found more likely to be engaged in the youth justice system. And it starts in the education system.
So we see a disproportionate number of kids with disabilities and neurodivergence being excluded from schools. Nearly half of the school suspensions and exclusions go to kids with disability, despite them being only 20% of the population. So it starts right at that point in time. That's the first early warning sign. Kids with disabilities are being excluded from schools. And then you can see the trajectory from their building where they're starting to get involved with the criminal justice system.
Matilda says many of these suspensions are caused by a lack of accommodation for these children's needs. Behavioral interventionist Lynette Hernandez, who works with students and children with autism, says acting out and behavior issues are oftentimes caused and exacerbated by how adults respond to neurodivergent children.
If people aren't respecting them when they're younger and as they're growing up and they have behaviors and someone's not being kind but firm with them, because especially like the very, very young kids with autism, they can tend to have a lot of temper tantrums because of this lack of understanding. And then if you get an adult that doesn't take the time and gets I'm going to say mean, but does not respect them, then I think it just spirals, right? Where someone's not respecting the child's not respecting you back. And instead of helping these children when they're young manage their emotions, in some ways, the way that adults are responding to them, it's just making it worse, right?
Professor Keith McVilley, a researcher and psychologist who studies the rates of neurodivergent youth in the justice system, says that we should look at this behavior from a different perspective.
Behavior is a form of communication. And the sooner we start looking at these kids' behavior, not as a criminal offense requiring a criminal justice response, but rather a cry for help from these young people, a cry for help to get them out of the appalling situations they find themselves in, the fact that their home life is not good, the fact that their peer networks are not supportive of them, the fact that they've become disengaged from the education system. We need to look at these behaviours and we need to decode the message that these kids are trying to tell us.
Solutions are out there to mitigate the problem, and sometimes adults aren't the solution, but other kids.
Kids are more likely to listen to kids. Okay? They're more likely to take notice of their parents than know-it-all psychologists like me. Okay, and I think we need to leverage peer-led programs. And I think there is some growing evidence to support where some of these kids have actually managed to navigate through the criminal justice system themselves. And they've gained a lot of what we call lived experience, that lived experience can be harnessed and channeled into peer-led programs to help these kids navigate the system and to get through. And I honestly think that a lot of these kids are going to learn a lot more from a well-resourced peer-led support program than they're ever going to learn from going to a class and me trying to teach them something new or provide therapy.
Matilda says there isn't enough transparency in the education system, and while some schools are doing better to keep students engaged, not all schools are kept accountable for excluding kids with disabilities. She says it isn't that they act out more, they simply need adjustments. Adjustments that can be the line between staying in school and suspension. Adjustments that can be as simple as a uniform.
So, for example, if a student is being suspended because they are not wearing their uniform correctly and they have sensory issues, meaning that they can't do up their top button, having an adjustment requiring, that means that that student doesn't have to do up their top button because of the sensory issues. It's a kind of simple example, but far too often the simple solutions are not being applied, let alone the more complex ones.
Professor Keith McVilley says a child-first approach is key to helping children in the justice system.
And it's really about saying we've spent a lot of time trying to manage people's behaviour and control risks, and we've done a lot of locking up of these kids. But we haven't actually focused on their strengths. We haven't actually asked them where they'd like to go in life. And I suppose the child-first focus really asks us to look at what are kids looking to do with their life? What are kids able to do with their life? And importantly, what supports can we put in place to take them forward?